ever noticed that every time you have enough to make ends meet, someone moves the ends? Hi, I'm Rob West. It's a question that may always be on your mind, but is rarely spoken. Will I ever have enough money? And the answer for Christians should differ from that of the world. I'll talk about that with Ron Blue today, and then it's on to your questions at 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. This is MoneyWise on American Family Radio. Biblical wisdom for your financial journey. Well, our guest today is Ron Blue, financial advisor and author, co-founder of Kingdom Advisors, and author of Master Your Money, a step-by-step plan for experiencing financial contentment. Ron, always great to have you with us.
It's always good to be a part of it, Rob. Thank you for asking me.
Absolutely. And Ron, in the very first chapter of your classic, Master Your Money, which, by the way, I read in college and had a profound impact on my life, you tackle this question, and this has really been a hallmark of your teaching for a long time. Will I ever have enough? Why is that question so important for believers to ask and answer?
Well, I think we can achieve success as we go through life, but that question is always in the back of our mind. Will I ever have enough? Or if I have enough now, will it continue to be enough? And it's kind of relevant today as we look at potentially a recession. And by the way, thirdly, how much is enough? Can I define it?
Yes.
And I believe that everyone, rich, poor, asks himself these underlying questions more frequently than we would like to admit. I would ask myself that question, Rob. This fear comes up a little bit. And you say, oh, my goodness, will I have enough? They're constantly in our subconscious, and therefore we deal with them. We have to deal with them somehow as we make our financial decisions. And I think there's really two extremes. One is we could hoard our resources and live out the philosophy, I'm going to get all the gusto I can. I only go around once, as the other extreme. But the Christian is confronted with this question: what is the appropriate Christian lifestyle? And I've dedicated my professional life really to helping believers answer those questions. And those questions are answered over time and not necessarily at a point in time.
Well, that's a key idea there, Ron. And those questions really plague us no matter how much money we have, right?
It's true, because nobody is in control of the economy by themselves. Nobody is in control of world events. Nobody is in control, really, of their own health or perhaps the health of their family. So very, very few individuals ever achieve a position of being able to live off the resources they've accumulated. And most of us become dependent on something. Perhaps it's the government and retirement, relatives, charity, or continuing to work to have enough income to meet our needs. And the longer we live, the greater those needs. Then we don't know when we're going to die. So how much is enough? Is a very real, relevant, and important question. But I've had the privilege of working and meeting with a lot of people who are better equipped to handle their future and uncertainty than others. And it's typically those who don't make a lot of money. One of the first clients I had was a pastor who never made more than $8,000. And he was wanting to talk to me to see if he had enough financial resources to live out the rest of his life. His wife was in assisted living care, and he was 80 years old, as was she. And he had been retired, and he had money, but he didn't know whether he would have enough to live it out. Well, as it turned out, this pastor had, through God's providence, saved money. He had saved $10,000 by the time he retired and had invested it with a friend, and the investment that he had made was well over $1 million at that point.
Wow.
And he had never made more than $8,000. But here was the important thing, not that God gave him the million, but the fact that his lifestyle was such is that he could live on a lot less.
Yes.
And that's where I think people get into trouble in terms of answering the question, how much is enough? Because it's a lifestyle question. And some people have learned to live on a little bit, and some can't. So That's a spiritual question that each of us needs to answer.
That's a critical question, one we all need to answer, and then we need to have the courage to follow through. Ron, always great to have you with us. Thanks for stopping by.
Thank you for asking me, Rob. I always enjoy it.
All right. Ron Blue, the author of Master Your Money, has been our guest today. Your calls are next, 800-525-7000. Stick around.
To sharpen the biblical worldview of Christians and to share the good news of Jesus Christ. That is the mission of the Christian Worldview Radio program. I'm host David Wheaton, inviting you to join us this Saturday morning at 9 Eastern, 8 Central, as we discuss all matters of life and faith from a decidedly biblical perspective. The Christian Worldview, Saturday mornings at 9 Eastern, 8 Central, right here on American Family Radio.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Friday edition of Washington Watch, last week...
No more tolerance for abusive actions by monopolies.
But is it really just another power grab by the federal government? Parents are not happy with classroom indoctrination and the radical policies they're pushing.
Washington Watch, weekday afternoons at 4 Central and Saturday evenings at 6 Central on American Family Radio.
Sound Mind Investing helps Christians reach their financial goals with step-by-step guidance for investors who are just getting started, those making investment choices for a company retirement plan or college savings account, and people getting close to their retirement years. SMI offers financial wisdom for living well. More information is at soundmindinvesting.org. The website also features many articles about common money management and investing topics. soundmindinvesting.org.
If you are engaging in sexual sin, today is the day to repent. As it was corrupt in Judah, let's be honest, the same things are happening today. The pornography addiction amongst the body of Christ is through the roof. And by and large, many in the church are not discussing these things too often because many of the people who are entrusted with the responsibility to do so, they're bound themselves.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III on American Family Radio.
Absolutely free. We know you've learned to be suspicious of those words, but really, you can get biblical financial wisdom delivered to your inbox absolutely free. Articles, videos, podcasts, and special offers on biblical resources. More than 50,000 people receive our free weekly wisdom email, and you can too. Create your free MoneyWise account by going to moneywise.org and click sign up to begin receiving weekly wisdom in your inbox.
Do you feel like your hands are tied with debt, preventing you from serving God? If you have credit card debt, Christian credit counselors can help. Through our debt management program, we can get you out of credit card debt about 80% faster while honoring your debt in full. For more information on how Christian credit counselors can help, visit ChristianCreditCounselors.org. That's ChristianCreditCounselors.org or call 800-557-1985. 800-557-1985.
Delighted to have you with us today on MoneyWise on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West, your host, taking your calls and questions on anything financial. Give us a call, 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. Always great to have our friend Ron Blue with us. He was in the first segment today. Ron is a personal mentor of mine, has had a huge impact on my life, and we're grateful for his presence regularly on this program. Today, tackling a really critical topic. How much is enough? You know, we need to ask and answer that question not only for our accumulation, our balance sheet. How much is enough to accumulate for the future? Because it's not about the mindless accumulation of wealth. We should have goals that align with our values, that are informed by our faith, our deeply held convictions and priorities as believers. But we also need to ask and answer that question, how much is enough for our lifestyle? As Ron said, the appropriate lifestyle of a Christian is not defined specifically in God's word. It doesn't say you should live on 62% of your income and do something else with the rest. It says you need to understand the heart of God, understand the role of money, your position as a steward, his position as owner, and seek his heart as you define enough. How much is enough for provision? How much should be given away? All of that is a matter of prayer between you and the Lord. But the question is, have you answered the question? And so often we don't. I know for many years in my life with Julie and I had not considered that question, how much is enough? And we all need to do that, be thinking about financial finish lines. What do we want to do? Because here's the thing, you know, as our income increases over time, our lifestyle will increase with it unless we protest to the contrary. And so as we have incremental increases in our income, our spending tends to just follow along. Well, what if we say, no, we're going to cap it. And as we get increases over time, that's money that we have available for additional giving, for other priorities, we're not just going to automatically increase our lifestyle with it. This is a critical question, I believe, for the Christian to ask and answer. Again, the question, how much is enough? Coming up on the broadcast today, your questions at 800-525-7000. We'll tackle some great emails. Ruth wrote in to us recently. She opened a credit card to build credit to purchase a home. She wants to know whether that's okay, whether she should close it out. We'll tackle that. Also, a great question from Danny about tithing on business income. He's wondering, should we tithe gross or net? If I own a business and I want to be giving out of that business, applying the principle of the tithe, how does it work with a business? Is that before expenses, after? Well, we'll tackle that. Also coming up today, preparing your child for college. That's right. This is particularly appropriate for me today. This morning, Julie, my wife, and my oldest son, Colby, actually set out to do a college tour. This is one of many that they're doing. He's a rising senior, beginning his senior year in high school, and so he's off looking at another college today. And I thought it'd be a great day to tackle some things you need to be thinking about as you prepare your future adult, your college-bound student, particularly for their first year. What are some things they need to know before they leave the fold? How do they maximize their education? What about financially, the things that they need to know? Because here's the reality. We're preparing future adults, and we need to make sure they are not only financially literate as they leave the home, but that they understand biblical financial wisdom, that they understand the counsel of Scripture as it relates to finances. Remember, there's more than 2,300 verses that deal with money and possessions, and we want to make sure they understand the heart of God as it relates to their money. We can't take our cues from the world in this particular area. If we do, we will not align ourselves with God's best. Instead, we need to understand first what biblical truth says and then go from there as we move forward in life. And your kids, your future adults, will be much better prepared for what God has for them if they do. So we'll tackle that a little later in the broadcast. All right, we've got some phone lines open today. We'd love to hear from you. The number to call, 800-525-7000. With any financial question, 800-525-7000. Let's begin today with Carlos. You're first on the program. Go right ahead.
Yes, sir. My mother's 89 years old, and my father's passed away, and my sister and brother don't want the property. And they got enough, they're retired, they got enough to make it for the next 100 years. And they said, if you want the old home place, you can have it. So I went and got a lawyer, and they've signed it over to me, you know, and after, you know, the death of my mother. But I'm wondering, would it, I have my own place, you know, and I'm wondering, would it be better for me to just buy that, give her a few thousand dollars, you know, and help her out that way, and then buy the house outright, you know, for taxes or whatever. Which way would it be better?
Yeah, from a tax standpoint, Carlos, you would be better off, and this is just financially speaking, this is separate from the issue you raised there at the tail end of the question about helping your mom out, but from a tax standpoint, it'd be better if you waited and inherited this property after her death, because that's going to then involve a step up in basis. so that whoever inherits the property, whether that's inherited three ways between the three siblings and then you'd buy them out, or whether it passes directly to you because they make it known to your mom that they don't want the property, that step up in basis is going to reset the cost basis for that property as of the date of death. So if she's owned that property for a long, long time, and there's a lot of gain that's built into that, that, you know, that would go away because that step up in basis would say that upon the sale of it, it would be valued as of the date of death, at least for the cost basis, which would be helpful for you to have that step up in basis. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I don't want to sell it. I actually want to sell my own house and move back to the home place.
Okay. Yeah. But at least you would reset that cost basis as of the date of death. And then any additional gains you have moving forward between now and the time you sell it, unless you pass it down to somebody else as well, would be at a much higher level. So that would be one option. The second option is you just, you know, buy it outright from her. And you certainly could do that as well. Has this been her primary residence for a long time?
About 60 years.
Okay. How much gain do you think she has in this property? What do you have any idea what she paid for it?
They inherited the property themselves.
Okay. All right. And what do you think it's worth today?
I don't know. $150,000, maybe $200,000.
Okay. You know, all right. Like, well, she would have, at least $250,000 in capital gains exclusion that she would not have to pay tax on because it's her primary residence. So, as a married couple, you get $500,000 in gain that you don't pay capital gains tax on. As a single person, you'd get $250,000. So that wouldn't be an issue if it's worth less than $200,000 because all of that would not be taxable to her. And then your cost basis would be at the amount that you buy it. So if you believe, from a tax standpoint, it doesn't seem like it really matters just given the situation here. I think the question is, would you rather go ahead and buy it now so that you'd have your mom would have the benefit of being able to have some of that money to put to work and for other expenses? Or would you rather wait and inherit it? It doesn't really matter from a tax standpoint based on what I'm hearing. We're going to take a break. Carlos, you stay on the line. We'll finish off the air. 800-525-7000. Give us a call.
Hello, I'm Sam Rohr, president of the American Pastors Network, a growing national network of pastors committed to the authority of Scripture and preaching the whole counsel of God. We believe biblical obedience is the foundation for revival, and impacting our culture for Christ is our duty. For too long, the pulpits of America have been silent on the important issues such as marriage and family and assault on liberty. Join us in the battle for truth on Stand in the Gap weekend, Sunday evenings at 6 p.m. on American Family Radio, and visit us at AmericanPastorsNetwork.org.
Siri, open my food delivery app.
Before you order in again, are you sure that's in your budget?
What budget?
Exactly. You need the free MoneyWise app. With its electronic envelope budgeting system, you'll know exactly where every dollar is going, and you can finally stay on top of your money.
I guess that does sound like a pretty good idea. Siri, download the MoneyWise app.
Okay. Searching for MoneyWise in the App Store. Learn more at MoneyWise.org.
When you hear this,
this is American Family News.
You know what follows is the truth. Your news from a Christian perspective.
Hundreds of teachers are going to have to walk into that school building, and they are forced to swallow political ideology that in many cases violates their very faith and conscience.
If you miss it at the top of the hour, American Family News podcasts are available at AFN.net. And sign up for our daily news brief at AFN.net.
Thank you from the bottom of my heart. I couldn't have had the procedure I needed without CHM's help sharing the bills. That letter from a member displays Christian Healthcare Ministry's purpose to glorify God and serve His people. CHM is the original non-insurance voluntary health cost-sharing ministry, enabling its members to share the cost of each other's medical bills. Call 800-791-6225 or visit chministries.org.
This is Frank Affney, host of Secure Freedom Radio. It's your personal, daily intelligence briefing about the challenges we face, how they're likely to affect you, and what we can do about them. You can find Secure Freedom Radio here every weeknight at 11 p.m. Eastern Time. Tune in to learn from our extraordinary experts what you need to know and will want to share. Join us for Secure Freedom Radio tonight at 11 Eastern, right here on AFR.
How should we as Christians think about investing? What if we could invest our money in a way that aligns with what we believe? At Eventide, we believe it is possible to love God and love our neighbor in the very practice of investing. We design investments for performance and a better world so you can invest for the future with a sense of wholeness and purpose. We call this investing that makes the world rejoice. More information is available at investeventide.com.
Thanks for joining us today on MoneyWise on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West, your host, taking your calls and questions. We've got a few lines open, 800-525-7000. Our team is standing by. We'd love to hear from you, 800-525-7000. Before we go back to the phones, let's tackle an email. This one came in from Ruth to questions@moneywise.org. She writes about credit cards today. She's saying, I'm relatively young. I opened a credit card in order to build credit to purchase a home. I know you aren't really supposed to have debt. Should I keep this open or close it out? And it's a great question, Ruth. A couple of thoughts on that. Number one, you mentioned, I know you shouldn't have debt. Debt is not a sin. There's nothing wrong with borrowing. However, there are clear warnings throughout Scripture about the use of debt. First and foremost, it changes the relationship to a master-slave relationship. It can be a burden to us. It can the use of debt can rob God of the opportunity to provide. It presumes upon the future. So yes, we need to be very careful about when we're borrowing. We certainly don't want to borrow for depreciating assets, which means we shouldn't use credit cards unless we're going to pay them off. So we need to use them only for budgeted items. We need to make sure we have spousal unity before we do any borrowing. I think those are the key ideas. In terms of your use of credit cards, I don't actually have a problem with folks using credit cards so long as, again, they're only using them for budgeted items and they get paid off in full at the end of the month. Why would we want to use them? Well, if we're using them for budgeted items and they get paid off, then we're not paying any interest. They are convenient, especially if we transact business online. There's fraud protections in terms of getting somebody compromises the account, you can dispute that and you won't be liable for it. In addition to that, it can help you build credit. And Ruth, it sounds like that's what you were looking to accomplish. And so here's the way I would tackle that. I would set up a recurring charge of some small amount, again, for a budgeted item, something you were already planning for. It could even just be a few dollars a month. That hits the card, you pay it off. What that's doing, though, is allowing you to be reported as an on-time payer, which is going to build your credit history over time. And your credit score is not only important for your ability to buy a home, get a mortgage with competitive terms and rates, but also it's being used for other considerations as well. Job hiring, for the ability to rent an apartment, insurance premiums, a whole host of issues that credit scores relate to. So you can safely build your credit by using a credit card for budgeted items, paying it off in full, and that will help you. The key for building your credit score is to be an on-time payer. Don't ever have a late payment. It's not the end of the world if you do, but let's try not to. Secondly, credit utilization is the single largest factor. That means you always want to keep your balances below 30% of the limit. I would like for you to keep them at zero. Ruth, we appreciate you writing to us today. God bless you. 800-525-7000. Let's head back to the phones. Dee's in Texas, and you're next on the program. Go ahead.
Yes. My question is, I have two houses. One is paid for, but I'm refurbishing it, and I'm going to take care of my elderly parents, 96 and 97 there. And then the house I live in, I owe maybe $60,000 on, but I can owner finance it, I can rent it, or I can sell it. I've lived there since 03, so I wouldn't have to pay taxes if I sold it now.
Yes.
I'm not sure if it's a good time to sell. Interest just went up, and, it was a window that was good, and now I think I missed it on selling.
Yeah, I don't think that's necessarily true. Although it's not a red hot seller's market, D, like it was, it's still a seller's market. It's still a very strong market for housing in particular, because there's still a lack of inventory, even though the economy is not as strong as it was, and we certainly could be headed for recession. Some will say we're already in one. And mortgage rates have more than doubled in the last several months because of rising federal funds rates. We still have a lack of inventory, meaning there's not enough homes for sale in this country to meet the demand that exists today. And so for that reason, we're not going to see, in my view, any kind of significant decline or perhaps any decline in housing prices. We're just not going to see the rapid increases. And we've moved away from this period, or at least we are in the process of moving away, where a house would go on the market and there'd be 15 offers in 24 hours, often paying 10, 20, 30% above true market value. You might get one or two offers in several days' time now. But again, still a great opportunity with elevated home prices. So I think the big question for you, D, is number one, would you like to just go ahead and sell this property and use that to pay down debt and be perhaps debt-free if you have the ability to do so? Or secondly, would you like to be a landlord? Is that something you have the time, the energy, the expertise to do? Do you understand the market well enough to know that whether it could be rented out successfully, what you'd bring in? Could you cover your debt service, your taxes and insurance, the maintenance, the marketing for that property to keep it rented? Is that something you want to do? I like real estate as an investment because it's an asset class that's different from stocks and bonds, and it provides income. And over time, you could use the rental income to pay off the remaining mortgage and then have an asset that will appreciate over time. But you have to want to get into being a landlord. So given that it's still a strong seller's market, and I think that's a viable option, which one sounds like it would be a better fit for you?
Well, what I was thinking about doing is leaving these houses. This is my retirement money. Are these the only what I have? And the one is totally paid for. But I was thinking about leaving them to my children. I have three children under the provision that they would take care of them now. I'm 69.
Okay.
And if they would want to take care of them as investment properties and they'll own them upon my death, that's what I wanted to do. So I would have some kind of income coming in.
Yeah. Well, I like that. I think, you need to do your research. You need to make sure that you're able to maintain these properties and keep up with them, whether that's you or hiring contractors to take care of repairs, things like that. But you can always sell it down the road. So I would say this sounds like a great option for you to go ahead and move out of that property, move into the other one, and become a landlord. We'll be right back on MoneyWise.
You probably have a strategy for your finances, your career, even your retirement. But do you have a strategy for your giving? At the National Christian Foundation, we can help you create a giving strategy to inspire your family, maximize your resources, and leave a lasting legacy of faith. To learn how, visit moneywise.org/NCF.
What would you do?
Aunt Sadie, I appreciate your thought behind the gift card, but I just can't take it. I promise not to shop at Target because they allow men in areas that need to be private and protected for women and children. I hope you'll go to afa.net/target and learn about it. I'm not giving them my money.
Aunt Sadie didn't know about AFA's call to boycott Target, but she knows now, and so do you. Learn even more at afa.net/target. afa.net/target.
Sound Mind Investing offers investing guidance grounded in the stewardship principles found in Scripture. Since 1990, SMI has helped tens of thousands of Christians acquire knowledge and confidence related to investing and overall money management. Regardless of your investing experience or how much you have to invest, you can learn to be a wise and faithful steward in the area of investing. More information about SMI and its approach to financial wisdom for living well is available at soundmindinvesting.org.
At MoneyWise, we are on a mission
to educate, equip, and connect you and many others with the powerful financial answers found in God's Word through national radio programs, our app, website, and other resources. If you've benefited from MoneyWise and believe in this mission, would you consider becoming a monthly MoneyWise patron? Check out all the benefits of a MoneyWise patron's membership at MoneyWise.org and click Give on the homepage.
AFR programming is now available on Alexa.
You're joking, right?
Nope, not joking.
Seriously?
Yep, this is not a drill.
Wait a minute, no way.
There's a way. The Alexa way. So if you just happen to miss your favorite shows, no worries. You can now listen to each podcast with Alexa. It's simple and it's free. Just visit afr.net/apps and click Alexa. We're not joking.
Christian Healthcare Ministries enables believers to meet their healthcare costs affordably, biblically, and compassionately. It's not insurance, but a voluntary cost-sharing ministry based on the biblical example of Christians sharing each other's needs. And members aren't fined under the law for not having health insurance. Christian Healthcare Ministries might be your health cost solution. Call 800-791-6225 or visit chministries.org.
This is American Family Radio, a listener-supported ministry of the American Family Association.
Thrilled to have you with us today on MoneyWise at American Family Radio. I'm Rob West, taking your calls and questions. Looks like we have a couple of lines open, 800-525-7000. Before we head back to the phones, let's talk about preparing your child for college. My wife, Julie, and my oldest, Colby, set out today for another college visit. He's a rising senior, and so it got me thinking about college. How can we prepare our kids? What are some things we need to know? Well, if you're a parent of a college-bound student, especially a first-year student, here are a few things you might want to discuss before they leave the fold. Number one, help your young adult understand the value of education. Talk about what college costs and the importance of working hard to justify the expense. By the way, I would encourage you well before their senior year to decide how much college of the cost of college you're planning to cover. Are you going to cover any of it? Are you going to cover all of it or somewhere in between? I would have that conversation if you're married, you and your spouse make that decision and then sit down with that future college student well before they're starting to think about college and have that conversation. Say, listen, this is what we're going to be able to provide you. If you want to go to a college that costs more than this, that's going to be on you. You're going to have to work, get scholarships, grants, perhaps even take on student loans, even though I would discourage that if at all possible. And when you do that, you can then encourage the student to go out and begin to research the various universities or colleges they're interested in. They can find the COA, the cost of attendance, which is the total cost, not only tuition, but room, board, other fees. And then they'll know what the gap is that exists between what you're willing to provide and what they want to spend. So they can begin to make some of those hard decisions, understand how important it is to get good grades if they want to go somewhere that's beyond what you're able to provide because they'll need scholarships and grants. But having that conversation early so there's not unmet or misaligned expectations, I think is really important. Now, whether or not your child has decided on a major, talk to them about the link between academic success and career opportunities. A strong college record can result in higher earning potential for the graduate, but they should also give consideration to the major or career track they're choosing and whether or not it will provide the compensation they're looking for, especially if they're taking on debt. Find out the resources their school offers for free tutoring, career guidance, and student support. Make sure your freshman knows it's okay to seek out help at school. Have a conversation about budgeting. Be clear. How much money will your student have each month in spending money? What is it for? Do they need to have discretionary money? But and what will they use it for? Help them put a spending plan together so they understand how to handle the money that they have. Discuss the dangers of credit cards. You know, according to collegefinance.com, 65% 10 of college students have some credit card debt with an average of over $3,280 per student. The most common credit card mistakes college students make are, of course, only paying that minimum payment or missing a payment. And I guarantee you the credit card companies will be on the quad seeking new applicants when they arrive. Talk to your students about values. You know, college is a big step into independence, and your child will have opportunities to make important choices. So share your moral and financial values with them again and ask them about theirs. Let them know that you'll be praying for them and that they can depend on you to support and love them no matter what. And then finally, parents of first-year students, be prepared to let go. They'll be okay. You'll survive. After all, God loves them even more than you do. You know, starting college is a major transition for students and their families. A little communication can go a long way to prepare them for a successful first year. And oh, by the way, here's one more pro tip for freshman parents. Be sure to remind your student to separate the whites from the darks in the laundry. you know what can happen if they wash the new red college sweatshirt with their white socks. They might not. Hey, I hope that was helpful to you as you think about preparing your child for college. All right, let's head back to the phones. 800-525-7000. Lynn is in Oregon. Lynn, you've been waiting patiently. Go right ahead.
Good morning. I have a question about the whether you should choose a reverse mortgage.
Yes, ma'am.
I have a in the situation where there's a house that's half paid for but cannot afford the payments.
Yeah.
There was a divorce. There are no children to leave the property to.
Yeah.
So the income just isn't enough to make those monthly payments to buy out the other half of the house.
Yeah. And this is a case where it actually could work for you. I'm not usually a fan, Lynn, of reverse mortgages, but in some cases they can be helpful, and that may be the case that you're describing. Because you can, of course, use the reverse mortgage proceeds for anything you want, to, which includes supplementing the income. You eliminate the monthly mortgage payments, which is often the largest expense. You, of course, remain owner of the home. Your name stays on the title, and you know, credit score isn't a factor. As long as you have 50% equity in the home, you can generally qualify. The downsides, well, they typically have higher fees than a traditional mortgage. You know, if you don't live in the home for a majority of the year, such as with a medical issue, the loan could be called. You know, there's the burden of dealing with the loan for the heirs, but in this case, you said there aren't any. And then if you choose a payment plan that doesn't last the life of the loan, you could outlive your proceeds. So you just need to make sure that that will work. Have you done the math, Lynn, to determine whether the reverse mortgage will pay out enough to cover the gap?
No, I haven't. I don't know. With there's probably, if there's going to be fees, there'll probably be a little bit less than 50% equity in the house.
Yeah.
I don't know how it works. We're just in the beginning stages. Does the company pay you for the half that you have invested already? Do you pull any money out, or do you owe them? Do you make payments?
No. As long as you have 50% equity going in, you can have a reverse mortgage, and essentially that existing mortgage would be paid off, and then you would get an income stream that taps the rest of the equity over time through a monthly payout that's pegged to life expectancy. So there won't be any mortgage payment that would be paid any longer. That mortgage would be satisfied, and then you'd be looking at receiving a small monthly amount that's geared toward the equity that's there, the value of the property, the age of the owner, and then you know, that would come in as a supplemental income, essentially.
Okay, so if a person is 70, and they have, say, $150,000 equity in the house, they would figure your life expectancy and pay you $150,000 for, let's say, the 20 years of life you have left.
Yeah, it's based on your age and the projected property expenses. So the older the borrower and the lower the property expenses, the lower the reverse mortgage life expectancy that's set aside. So essentially, you just need to kind of go through the process to determine what you would be receiving either as a lump sum or as a monthly amount that would come out throughout the rest of her life. So I would go ahead and look into this if she's planning on staying in the property, and this is something that they want to hold on to. This could be a solution to do that. Of course, the other option is to sell and downsize. Try to buy a smaller property where they would own it free and clear. But I think in a case like this, this could make a lot of sense. So I'd probably begin to take a look at it and do a little exploration to see exactly how much money would be available based on this home and the age of the owner. Okay?
Right. Okay, thank you.
All right, Lynn. God bless you. 800-525-7000. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, much more on MoneyWise on American Family Radio. Stick around.
Washington Watch advances a culture where human life is valued and religious liberty thrives.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, host of Washington Watch, right here on the American Family Radio Network, inviting you to join us each weekend for the weekend edition of Washington Watch for the latest from our nation's capital on what is happening as it pertains to faith, family, and freedom. You'll hear from policymakers, congressional leaders, and others each day, 4 p.m. Central Time. Be there.
Hello, I'm Don Hawkins, here to tell you about Encouragement Live, 55 minutes of industrial strength radio encouragement featuring resourceful guests plus practical biblical insights to help you face life's challenges. We'll be taking your phone calls, so plan to join us for Encouragement Live, Saturdays at 7:05 p.m. Central, 8:05 p.m. Eastern, here on American Family Radio.
45,000. That's how many times MoneyWise referred a listener to a Certified Kingdom Advisor, or CKA, last year. And for good reason. These are trusted financial, legal, and accounting professionals who have completed a rigorous certification program to ensure they provide biblically wise financial advice. You can find a local CKA professional in your area by going to moneywise.org and clicking the Find a CKA button on the homepage.
Investing is more than just returns. It's an expression of who you are and what you value. Does the way you invest your money reflect your identity as a Christian? At Eventide, we design investments for performance and a better world, so you can invest with the confidence to reach your financial goals while remaining true to your Christian values and commitments. We call this investing that makes the world rejoice. More is available at investeventide.com. That's investeventide.com.
Thanks for joining us today on MoneyWise on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West, your host, taking your calls and questions, 800-525-7000. Before we head back to the phones, another email. This one comes in from Danny. Danny writes, "Should I tithe on the gross income of my business? It sounds right to me, but I won't make any money after I pay all the bills if I do." And Danny, you're right. That would not work in most businesses. You know, the tithe, if you apply the principle of the tithe that we see throughout the Old Testament, referenced in the New, it's 1/10 of your increase. So with a business, that means the net profit after you make all of your bills and obligations after those are paid. So you've got a couple of ways you can do this. Number one is, if you own the business, then you could just tithe as the income, whether that's in the form of salary or distributions, profit distributions, as that is paid out to you, you could tithe on it as you receive it. Or if you have a profit that's going to be held in the business, and this is a business that you control and you want to tithe off of that, that's certainly fine. And that would be done before it's paid to you. And then essentially you'd, I imagine, tithe again as it comes into you as income. But the way you would do that is you would have to make sure whether that's quarterly or annually, you determine what is your true profit after expenses are paid. That would be your increase. And then you would make the tithe after that. Most businesses, if you tithed on the gross amount, the business wouldn't be able to function because, depending on the margins that exist in your business, often your expenses for products and goods and services and overhead would be such that a 10% tithe off of the top potentially would hinder the ability from functioning. So you really want to look at the increase, whether that's the increase to the business at a set period in time, determining what's the profit looking back, or as it comes into you as increase when it comes in as compensation or profit distributions. Danny, I hope that's helpful to you. If you'd like to send an email to us, you can do that at questions@moneywise.org. All right, let's head back to the phones. We'll head to Louisiana. William, thank you for your call. Go right ahead. William, are you there? All right, we'll put William on hold, see if we can locate him, and then go to Robin in North Carolina. Robin, you're next on the program.
All right, we'll put William on hold, see if we can locate him.
Turn your radio down for me, Robin, and then you go right ahead with your question.
How you doing today? We hope you're doing well.
Doing great, yes, sir.
Good. I was wanting to know what is the best way to show less taxable income at the end of a year, and is a 457B a good way to do that, the 457B plan?
Yeah, it certainly can be. So a 457 is a tax-advantaged employee retirement plan. Do you work for the state or local governments or a nonprofit?
Yes, sir. I work with North Carolina State.
Okay, very good. Yeah, so the 457B is the most common of the 457 plans for state and local government employees. You can contribute up to 100% of your salary, provided it doesn't exceed the applicable dollar limit for the year. And then it's in a tax-deferred environment, so the gains are not taxed until you take it out, and it'll come out as taxable income. One way you could avoid taxes with a 457 is to contribute enough to max out any matching contributions, and then as you put that money in, then that would be excluded from your taxable income for the year, and then get that money growing for you for the future. So very similar to a 401k in a private sector environment, this would be a great way, Robin, for you to show less taxable income and get some money that's growing tax deferred for the future.
Okay, that sounds good. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. And listen, a systematic contribution to a 457, especially in this environment we're in right now where the market is down and we've got continued pressure, and I think there's more downside to come. This is actually, despite the volatility, this is a great time to be investing because we don't want to buy at the top all the time. You're buying at a discount. So I'd say starting that contribution to the 457B makes a lot of sense right now. Hey, God bless you, Robin. We appreciate you calling today. Let's try William again in Louisiana. William, are you there?
This is William. Can you hear
me?
Yeah,
great. Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
Okay, what I would like to comment on is my wife and I, we bought a starter home and paid it off in 11 years. And then we saved up and did not buy the house that we thought we needed or wanted until I retired at age 65 and paid cash for it.
Yep.
Looking back over that, I think it would have been better if we'd bought the house we wanted and needed in the beginning, because by the time we bought the house, I'd saved up the money, but the house price had gone up so much. So I'd just like for you to comment on that philosophy of saving up until you can pay cash for a house like we did. Now, the starter house we bought was adequate. We called it It'll Do House. So, but anyway,
yeah.
I just don't think that was a very good philosophy, and I'd like to just hear your comment on it.
Yeah, very good. There's a couple of thoughts here. I mean, I guess the question is, what is the average increase of a home nationally per year? And, you know, right now we're in a little bit of an unusual situation where the average increase year over year between April 2022 and April 2021 was 21% nationally. So, I mean, that's a massive increase. Obviously, that's, you know, not typical. Normally, national appreciation averages around 3.5% to nearly 4% a year, depending on the market that you're in. That's nationally, of course. So the question would be, you know, would you be better off to, you know, buy this starter home, live in it, as long as you can be happy with it. It gives you enough space and so forth. And then you could invest that money and earn a higher rate of return. You would actually be outpacing with the funds that you'd eventually buy the home with, the appreciation of the home, depending upon you know, where it's located. And obviously there's some anomalies like we've experienced in the housing market over the last year. So theoretically, you could do this in a way that allows you to always pay cash, which you've done, and never have a mortgage, which there's a benefit to that. And you could do it in such a way where the potentially the growth of the money that you're going to use to buy it outpaces the appreciation of the home itself. So financially speaking, you come out ahead, even doing it the way you described. But the other side to this equation is just, you know, this is not a pure investment. It's where you live, right? So with a home, you know, the way you define an investment is as soon as it accomplishes the purpose for which you held it, you sell it. Well, that's not the way we approach our homes, because it's where we live. It's where we build the memories and raise our families, and it's what we enjoy and so forth. So oftentimes folks who don't have a conviction necessarily about being debt-free throughout their whole life will go ahead and move from their starter home to their next home and to the one after that throughout their lives, because they're raising families, they're adding to the number of their, you know, in their family, they want more space, they want to be able to enjoy the home that that they want before they get to retirement. And obviously, if you factor that in, it's not just a pure mathematics question. There's other elements to it. And I think we have to find the happy middle there. We've got to live in the tension and be asking the Lord to give us wisdom to know how much is enough. When do we go ahead and buy that house, even if we have to take on a mortgage? And, you know, what's the right amount of home for us that's not going to strap us financially, but allow us to enjoy the place that we live and have enough space, you know, for the number of people we have in our family. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. I just thought I'd share my experience and, you know, help somebody else that's struggling with this. My advice would be that, looking back on it, it wasn't a bad decision, but I don't think it was the best decision.
Yeah.
I think we should have bought the house we needed and wanted and dealt with it. Anyway,
yeah, and you certainly could have enjoyed it for a much longer period of time. I think from a financial standpoint, you're actually going to come out ahead, because not only do you have to factor in that money could have been growing quicker outside of this home, but you have the additional costs of maintaining a bigger home, upkeep, taxes, HOA fees, insurance, mortgage interest. So you saved all of that. The downside is you're just now beginning to enjoy the fruit of all of this hard work in retirement. And I think to your point is perhaps you could have enjoyed it a little sooner by taking on a mortgage and having a little more expense, but you know, being able to have that larger home before you see the retirement season. So I think this is a great thing for us all to ponder, William. What is the right approach to that? And that goes back to our opening topic today with Ron Blue, which was how much is enough? And I think for all of us, we need to be prayerful about that. How much is enough lifestyle? And what is the right amount of home? And how much should we be spending? It doesn't mean that everything that comes in gets spent on our lifestyle. We should be asking the Lord. If money is a tool to accomplish His purposes, and it is, and He's the master, what does that look like for us? What does it mean to provide for our families? And I think as we prayerfully think through that together, we can arrive at the right decision and choices for each of us. But I think that's the key, and the starting point is to recognize it's all God's to begin with. Every penny of it, not just 10%, it all belongs to Him. So how can we be faithful in managing God's resources? Hey, thanks for being along with us today. That's going to do it for us. We'll be back again to do it all over tomorrow. Let me say thank you to my team today. Pat Montague handling our phones today. Mr. Devin Patrick, our producer today. Jim Henry providing great research as well. Grateful to be along with you on American Family Radio each day. And by the way, visit our website, if you would, moneywise.org. Create a free account to ensure you get the MoneyWise Weekly Wisdom email. The next edition goes out tomorrow. We'd like to make sure one is delivered to your inbox. Again, moneywise.org. Just create a free account, and we'll send it to you tomorrow. Hey, I hope you have a great rest of your day. Come back and join us tomorrow. We'll see you then. May God bless you. Bye-bye.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.